Welcome back to another episode of Cigars and Cinema. Grab a cigar, something to pair it with, and let's journey into another episode of Smoke and Screen.
I can go slow ahead. Come on down and chump some of this.
You're going to need a bigger boat. All the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
This is our victory dance. Not until the fat lady sings.
The force is with you, young Skywalker.
Now make it big, big, and give them 10% off.
Now make it 5%.
That can't be done. Get out of here!
Today's episode of Cigars and Cinema is coming to you from the OGT Cigar Society. Enjoy a 5-pack of premium custom cigars each month at an undeniable price. Join the community and smoke with us on the Oakland Tobacconist YouTube channel as we delve into the rich experience of boutique and craft cigars and many cigars and vitolas custom made just for our membership. If you're interested and if you want to find out more about the subscription and a whole host of boutique cigars, visit us at www.oaklandtobacconist.com or find us on social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok at OGT Cigars.
Hello and welcome to Cigars and Cinema Podcast. This is where we smoke cigars while unabashedly commentating and in some cases giving extreme opinions on film and entertainment. I'm one of your hosts, Eric Drazen, and along with me tonight, as usual, is Mike Coleman. Coleman, we're back at it again.
Yeah. Another one for the books.
It is another one for the books, but this is one I'm looking forward to because I not only love this movie, but I also love the book as well. So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. No, this episode I have also been looking forward to. I feel like this is one of the first movies we said we should do an It episode, you know? Like,
yes.
It's one of those movies. Because you had to talk me into watching this movie the first time I ever watched it.
And it took some convincing.
And it was worth it. It was worth it. Good. Round two was a lot easier, but still just, ugh.
So anyone watching tonight, before we jump into it, grab a cigar, something to pair it with, and let's journey into another voyage of smoke and screen. We've got a few people on. We've got Andy on. We've got Curtis on. Texas Taurus was in here for a hot minute.
All right.
Andy is smoking a Paul Stulak Exclusiva, which is, I love that cigar. It's aging beautifully. In the humidor since November 2022, paired with a Glenlivet 12. Very nice.
Ooh,
very nice.
Nice.
So
what
as
we
usual,
got, Eric?
Yes, we will be talking about our cigar. It's the orange band in the bag that I had sent you. We're gonna make a few announcements very quickly before we jump into it. First of which, it is our Cigars and Cinema official sampler pack. There's only one of these left. So if you guys want to smoke along with us, this is the lineup. 4 cigars, an incredible price. Like, I dare you to find a price better. And so we're smoking one of these cigars each week when we talk about the movie. So you can find this, you know where to find us. Also, a big announcement I've been looking forward to is that the OGT Cigar Society will be finally reopening. If you guys listen to the podcast, if you watch the show, if you follow us on social media, the Society has been closed for some time, but we have something extra special dropping for our Halloween release. And so it will be opening on Friday the 13th. So if you're not on the waiting list, yes, now is the time to jump on the waiting list so that you are alerted when it is available. Because as usual, when we are dropping exclusives, there's a limited finite amount of spots. So do not miss it. Don't miss it. In terms of what we're smoking tonight, Coleman, we are smoking the Rojas Barbacoa Robusto. I figured since last time we did a really strong cigar, let's find a medium of the road. So this is our cigar that we're jumping with.
I grew hair on my knuckles after last week. There was,
it's a strong cigar, that's for sure.
That was a strong stogie.
And this cigar, like Rojas, we've smoked the Connecticut version of this, Carnitas. It was like a yellow band.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, so this is like the cigar that put Rojas kind of on the map. I mean, it's a very like popping label. Like the label just kind of jumps out.
The label is great.
So this barbacoa is a 5x50 Robusto. It features a Sumatra wrapper with Nicaraguan binder and filler. And in the filler has tobacco from the Somoto region, which is not very common. And it has a very distinct flavor. So I like this cigar a lot. It's a standby.
Good.
Yeah. So before we jump into the movie, how about, let's say we give it a cut and a cold draw.
Yeah. Kind
of see where you stand on this. Go ahead and cut this. And it's a shorter cigar, so hopefully it'll last the whole episode. I think it will, but we'll see how it goes.
Oh.
Nice even cut right there.
What do you got?
5x50 Robusto. For those who don't know, a cold draw is where you cut the cigar and you kind of take a first puff before it's lit. Sweet.
Berry.
Yeah. There's like a medicinal cherry sweetness to this.
Okay.
Do you kind of see that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing that. I can pick that up.
Yeah, interesting. Curtis is lighting up an absolute favorite of mine, lighting up the Stallone OGT Anniversario, which we smoked on the show as well.
Yeah, so that was a good one.
Yes. And don't feel alone, Coleman. Andy is saying, my friend Mike got a bit green from last week's stick. So,
yeah. You know. I'm just saying. I ain't ashamed to admit it. It was a strong stick.
Yes, yes. Good balance, but it's heftier. So let's light this puppy up and let's see where we stand.
Every cigar is smoked in thirds. First third, second, and final. Just as every movie in three acts. As you light up, take the time to toast it, smell the room note, and experience the first notes as the tobacco comes alive. In the same way, movies follow a structure, the Aristotle structure, inciting incident, attack, crisis, climax, resolution. In this order, we will break down the cigar and we will break down the movie.
All right. Sorry, I was a bit delay. My single flame takes a while to get this well toasted. So let me know, what are your first impressions?
Oh, see. Oh, so I was supposed to toast it?
Well, okay.
I felt like the wrapper was like kind of enclosed on it, and I thought you weren't supposed to toast those.
So I have a little bit of explaining to do. So you're completely correct. When you have a closed foot cigar, you don't have to toast it. You can just go into lighting it. You get more of the wrapper flavor, and it's supposed to burn in. The closed foot is so shallow on this that you could do that. There's no right or wrong to do it. But because it's so shallow, I tend to toast the barbacoa, but that's preference. So you weren't wrong.
There's no right or wrong. I'm sure there
is. Not on this closed foot. Not on this closed foot. You must believe me. Right off the bat, that sweetness is still there. Retrohale only brings the spice. Other than that, there's not much pepper to me.
Yeah, definitely a little bit of spice on the retro.
Draw is perfect. I'm really digging the draw.
This is a very dried stone fruit.
Okay. Yeah.
Figish. I don't know. Figish, like Fig Newtons. I don't know. I'm getting a strong sense of Fig Newtons.
Okay. Like, yeah, there's a bready component. I definitely see the bready component in there. Almost an apricot flavor, like a dried apricot for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Apricot's a stone fruit. I got my bases covered.
There we go. Great start. And this is meant to be like an everyday cigar. It's not supposed to blast your palate out. It can be paired with a something in the morning, something at night. It has enough flavor and body to stand up to like a spirit. So I feel like it's a really good like any time of the day cigar.
Yeah, this is an afternoon cigar. It has the vibes of afternoon.
Vibes. It's vibing. So, as we alluded to tonight, our pick of choice to kick off the Halloween series of Cigars and Cinema, we are talking about none other than It, the chapter one. It will probably spill into chapter two.
That one? I thought we were watching the other one.
Well, then we'll talk about that. This is not to be confused with the Tim Curry version, which I don't really recommend. I know I'll probably get some hate for that, but I don't recommend the Tim Curry version.
We'll get into why you don't want to recommend it.
Sad. But yeah, so we're talking about It, made in 2017. To rattle off a few of the facts, it is under the genre of horror. It is rated R. It has a running time of 2 hours and 15 minutes. In the summer of 1989, a group of bullied kids band together to destroy a shape-shifting monster, which disguises itself as a clown and preys on the children of Derry, their small main town. This was directed by Andy Muschietti. I think that's how you say it, Muschietti. Do you happen to know what else this guy has directed?
No.
So,
no.
For as much as I love this movie, he kind of got famous for a movie called Mama.
Okay.
Which was a horror film, which I have not seen. But recently, he has come out with a new release this last year. It's I guess, a movie. It's maybe you've heard of it before. It's called The Flash. I don't know if you've seen it. If you haven't seen it, good on you.
Yeah. No. Nope.
It was a tragedy. It was a car wreck. It was a tragedy. It was not good. So I don't know how you go from a movie like this to making Flash. I mean, he made a few others, but yeah. Ooh, that was not good. Not good.
I don't know if there was a director though that could make that movie good. You know?
True. You had to play by the rules of the machine.
Exactly. No. But yeah, no. This movie, this is a good movie. This is a good horror film.
Like, because you don't like the genre of horror films.
I hate the genre, and this movie reminds me why I hate the genre, but the movie is freaking good enough that it's worth it, you know? And that's why I say it's like, I'm not anti-horror. I will watch them. I just have to have the right people tell me why it's okay. Worth the watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, all right, give it a shot.
Right. No, exactly. No, and I will say too, like, I'm not the biggest fan of horror films, but there are certain ones that people talk about. I'm like, okay, sounds interesting. I always use the word gumption. I suppose I can get enough gumption to watch that movie. Yes. There's enough reward. Joshua Keeney is saying The Flash was the worst movie I've seen this year. Yeah, it was not good. Not good.
And I don't Curtis, feel like there's many competing for that.
True. Yeah, that's very true. Curtis is saying there's probably a lot more cooks in the kitchen. Yeah, in the kitchen for Flash. Since Curtis is on, Curtis, I got your message, and I really appreciate you giving us suggestions. In fact, we're going to be announcing at the end of the show our lineup for the whole month, because we're picking horror films, scary movies for the whole month. One of those suggestions was sent in by Curtis Bailey. I tried to convince Coleman to see It Follows, but he didn't like the synopsis.
Sorry, man. I don't know. He the words ghost infection, just, I was like, nope, don't need that in, need that in this brain.
Yeah. To be fair, I said people are basically infected by this ghost entity that is transferred through copulation, through an STD. And I think it's a good analogy. I like the movie personally. So, really. But
I don't know. That just,
No, I totally get it. And I'm glad that you're a sport for like kind of like delving into the horror genre. And I'm glad that you gave it a chance, because I was hoping you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I remember, the first time I watched it very clearly. And it was like a love-hate relationship, like as I'm watching it going like, oh no, you know. But still, you make it through it and it's like, okay, that was worth it. If there's one thing I'll say about this movie in particular, I don't know if it's Stephen King as a whole, but this movie in particular, this guy gets bullying down very well. Like, there's so many times that you get the bullying kind of stories, and they're so cliche and lame and bad. And it's like, the kids who were bullied, it's like, this is the type of crap they went through, or this is like how they felt, like going separate ways around school to avoid seeing people. It's like, it's bad, people. And I don't know. he is able to make you hate some of these kids. Like, you're just like, oh my gosh, I want to see this kid burn.
Yes. Now, and this is what's so funny. So, I could say avid Stephen King reader. I haven't read everything he's done. I've read a high percentage of what he's done. I really enjoy him as an author. You think of iconic characters like It, Pennywise, or The Man in Black, or Cujo the dog. Like, you think of these, like, or Cujo. Jack Nicholson's character in The Shining. You think of these, like, iconic villains and monsters. Now, I used to listen to a lot of his own, like, speeches and such like that. And he was like, I'm not a horror writer. I'm not an author who writes horror. I write charged suspense, basically. Now, when you look at it face value, you're like, yeah, these are horror books. But then when you read it, you're like, no, this is really a thriller suspense, but it's dealing with monster elements. Mm-hmm. But kids, like in It, like Henry Bowers, there's a dude in The Stand, which is one of his most famous books, called Harold. He's Harold in that book called Mr. Mercedes, Brady Hartsfield. These are all like just normal people per se, and they're the worst. Like, you hate Henry Bowers. He is so like, you're right. He does a great job on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and it's, like I said, it's one of those where it's not like the typical reasons of why you would hate a bad guy. It's like, you hate him because you're like, if there was a person who I would say is evil, it's like, it's you, dude. You lost. Like, sorry, this is where I draw the line, and we're bringing back, you know, the pillory or whatever. It's like, something's got to be done here.
Well, and like, but you can attest to like going through a book series like Game of Thrones and watching the seasons of how like so much worse those people are in the books than they are on screen.
Yeah, and I remember you told me that you were like, if you think the movie's bad, it's worse in the book. And I was like, I can't read the book then, because it's so messed up. So messed up.
So before, like, as we are on the precipice of jumping into like plot points for It 2017, what I want to at least like lay down the foundation for this, we always hear the old adage, well, the book's better than the movie. Which even in this case, it's true. The only time I've really found that, my personal experience, is that Jaws the movie is better than Jaws the book. But the thing I will give, the reason this movie goes so far for me, is because where Stephen King movies go wrong is that, because we're dealing with the box office, because we're dealing with producers and production companies, the emphasis is to how much can we really like put so much focus on the monster or the evil entity or the grotesque nature of this. Whereas I feel like they balance it like the book balances. You spend a lot of time, character-driven moments, character-driven ideas. And Pennywise is a focus of the movie, but he's not the only focus, and it's refreshing. And I think that's why I enjoy it so much.
Yeah. I think having Pennywise be basically just, it embodies whatever you fear.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a great vehicle for driving different character lines forward, because it gets to morph for every character. So it's not, you know, oh, it's a big scary monster and it's a big scary monster for everyone. It's like, no, it can be, you know, a past memory. It can be, you know, infection. It's like the violent clown, you know, a possessed painting or whatever. It's like, it can be all these different things. And so, it allows you to also just explore each character and what their, you know, story is, why they're a loser, you know. And it's just like, gosh, man, these movies are also very hard for me when like kids are involved, because like, you can't just help but go like, you know that there's kids out there that are dealing with this, you know, and you're just like, oh, these poor kids, you know. It's like this sucks, you know. It's just it's hard to watch all these kids go through all this really like horrible crap.
Well, and even as you you started the whole conversation too. It evokes this level of empathy, not sympathy, of like, they got this right. Like, part of this was what we lived through, or I lived through. And I feel like you,
oh yeah,
just as much as you have those fears to pull on, you have the each aspect kid that it's like, yeah, I resonate with Eddie, or I resonate with Stan, or something mm-hmm. like that. So yeah, I feel like it's very well handled that way. It's not just, okay, we need a nerd, we need an obese kid.
Yeah.
We need like mm-hmm. let's figure out why are they this way. And they even have crossovers where that's not just their only driving force, which is cool.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and it is one of those things where obviously, yeah, he hits, you know, kind of the major cliches. But like I said, even though he's hitting the major cliches, he like really goes into the dark side of it. And mm-hmm. for me, that's one of the things that's very refreshing, is because it should be hard and uncomfortable to watch, you know, those types of stories, because it's like, yeah, this sucks.
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
better. You know?
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's but yeah, like I said, it's a very good. Yeah, it's just to bring it back to the original point of having the main entity of, or the villain, the monster, being basically just fear in general. It's, mm-hmm. yeah, just it's a great monster to have, you know,
yes.
as your villain.
And I feel that coincides for me, like when I look at the I'm going to try to remove like the book in terms of like we're trying to focus on the movie. And in essence, too, kind of just it, chapter one, focusing on that major dramatic question, protagonist, antagonist. I feel like the major dramatic question for me when I watch this movie is it's very much a coming of age and the thresholds yeah. that a young adolescent has to cross in order to come of age. And a lot of mm-hmm. those things infused with fear, family members, location, personal, like, hygiene or personal like physical issues, all of these things are at play. And it's kind of like the major dramatic question is, will they have the strength to cross that threshold and grow into adulthood in its extreme environment? We're using extreme storytelling to kind of like magnify that question. That's where I feel like for me the major dramatic question lies.
So did you actually state what you think the major dramatic question is?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Can you bring that down to a sentence for me?
Will they be able to cross the thresholds that hold them in their adolescence?
Okay.
That being their fears, their family dynamics, into becoming their own people, their own, like, having their own ideas, versus how they've been raised, the environment they've been kept in, and the grief that holds them in their childhood. So, like, will they move on from that?
Will they come of age?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Will they transition into adulthood or whatever? Yeah. Right. No, okay. Yeah, I think that's. Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's what the embodiment. I would have said, like, are they going to be able to, like, defeat Pennywise? You know, is kind of like, are they going to be able to conquer what he represents, which is like fear? You know, it's like, are they going right. to be able to face their fears?
Well, know? The reason I don't want to sum it up that like easily is because like the whole idea of Pennywise is it's infecting this town, which infects the society, which infects their families. Like they're all blind to it because of the presence of Pennywise. He's underneath the mm-hmm. city. He's infected right. the entire city. And so it's like Pennywise goes hand in hand with the struggles that they have, whether it's Beverly and her dad, Eddie and his
right.
Ebos and his mom, mm-hmm. losing Georgie, like all those types of things. It's infused with Pennywise, but I think right. that's why it works, because it's relatable. So,
yeah,
as outlandish okay. as a space clown is that feeds off of fear. I mean,
you know, I'll take it. It's one of those things. What I would rather take that origin story of something. It's like, yeah, it's a demon space clown, you know, or whatever. It's like, okay, cool. You know, like that to me is like, that's a totally fine origin story, because it's like, it's not like it's from here, you know, it's like yeah. something alien to us. And it's just now here for the story's sake, you know, it's like, okay, cool. It's when yeah. people try and create like these like super deep lores of like all this other stuff. It's always kind of like, wait, why?
Well, I think if you're searching for something like that, then you can read the book and you'll get a healthy portion of that. But in terms of the movie, then yeah, it doesn't have to waste time on exposition that it's like, I don't really care about that right now. I care about right. the kid's journey and such. So
yes, yeah.
In terms of everything setting it into motion, you could argue, I guess, like the inception of Pennywise to Derry could be the inciting incident. But in terms of this story and this plot, I feel like Georgie is the inciting incident.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like the start of this movie is the inciting incident, which, Georgie getting eaten.
So what this movie effectively accomplishes for me in the scene of Georgie, aside from geeking out, like when I saw this in the theater, it was freshly mm-hmm. after reading the book, like it was like 5-6 months later. And it came out down to the detail of like his mom playing the haunting piano piece, him having to go down to the cellar, doing the whole boat thing, Georgie going out. I'm like, wow, they captured this moment, this iconic moment that is it. They set it and they set the tone. Like immediately after that happens, you're like, okay, I'm in for this type of movie.
Like, yeah, no. I think that's also what I appreciated about this movie is if you get to the point of Georgie, or if you conclude the Georgie scene, it's like, yeah, that's the movie. Like you're going to be in for all that, you know, it's going to just keep happening. And so I do appreciate that. Cause sometimes I feel like they try and slow burn it in or whatever. And it's always kind of like, we just get to it. Yeah. You know, this is like, here it is. Boom. Let's go.
And like there's that delicate balance of like how much do you show of your villain right off the bat, how much do you leave up to the imagination? While you see a decent amount when he first goes up and bites Georgie's hand, it's so quick you're like, wait, I almost missed it. So you see it, but there's enough tangible residue for your imagination to go, what?
the first time I watched that scene scared me. Like, oh no, oh no. Like I just watched this poor little kid get ripped into pieces.
Right,
this is not good.
And the interesting thing about a difference between like the death count in this movie and versus the book is Georgie in that scene gets his arm ripped off and he struggles out in the street and someone finds him. Like it's not like, oh, he's lost in the sewer.
Oh.
So Bill is haunted by the image of this man carrying Georgie, almost like the Frankenstein scene, which there's a lot of parallels with like old horror films and that. And so Georgie bleeds out and dies from it. It's like a mortal wound. Oh. So the question more on Bill's side is why did that happen? What happened? What was down there? Not so much, I've got to go find Georgie. He might still be down there, basically.
Oh, okay. But and this is where I feel like books versus movies play out differently. Mm-hmm. I think the movie did a wise choice in shifting what he's trying to find. You know, he's trying to find Georgie. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's better.
Right.
That's more believable. Or more relatable. Like you're looking for something.
And it definitely plays on closure. The mind of a 12-year-old. Like, oh yeah, there's a way he still could be alive down there. And as an adult, you're like, nah. Which is that is a really hard scene when he goes home and his dad finds the whole hamster set up. Because you can see his dad's grieving and Bill is grieving and they cannot talk about it. Like it's that's a really tough scene.
That's what I mean. That's what makes this movie so good is those in between the horror, you know, it's like makes the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the scenes with which kid is the one with the placebos?
Eddie.
Eddie and his mom and like all that stuff is just like so hard to watch. But it's like it is amazing, like character, you know, building and character stories, because it's just like because it's represented so brutally, you're just like, oh gosh.
Right. So that's the question. It's like as a director, when you're dealing with a mammoth of a story that is this book, that's a bajillion pages. and you're dealing with all these characters that you want to give enough time for, how do you do that? I feel like this movie sometimes fumbles the ball and sometimes keeps it. The attack, I feel like, happens more along the lines of, like, after they experience each individually, most especially when Beverly deals with her encounter in the bathroom.
Right. Yeah.
And because you have these, like, separate situations, and that's also around the time, like, I know, like, in terms of minute mark, if we're talking about minute mark, like, it really is around the time of when Ben finally breaks away from getting his name carved by Henry Bowers into his belly, and they meet him, and they're like, we got to go help him, basically. Like, at this point, okay, we've seen all the problems they have. Now they're meeting up, and they're assembling their team. But I feel like that's the attack around there. Like, okay, will they be able to assemble together and deal with the struggle that's now before them?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I feel like, though, I feel like Ben joining the team happens a lot earlier than them helping Beverly, right?
Right. Well, it happens around like 30 minutes into the film, when, like, a little after the 30 minute mark, because Ben, of course, has met Beverly and is obsessed with her. But then they take him to the pharmacy and they run into her at that point. And she steals the medical assistance that they require to help Ben out.
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's all. Yeah. That's the kind of hard part of this is they all, have their own little kind of individual attack phase. So, I think it's them teaming up and becoming a group is, would be the attack.
Yeah. So maybe I phrased that wrong in the beginning, but that's where it leads up to, I feel like. And now you have this group of kids. This is even before they've talked about, like, what they're dealing with and the issues that they're having. Because it also handles it well, and, like, they're just being kids. I love the scene. It's just hilarious when they're jumping into the lake, and then they're kind of just, like, hanging out, because it's like, this is something that what it does really well is, as a child, you have easier ways, I think, to get lost in the moment than you do adults. So even though, this is traumatizing to anybody that's seen this killer clown chasing them, now they're just hanging out in the lake. Like, the escaping moments and those moments of, like, you know how, like, when you're a kid, it's like, oh, we're going to do movie night or something, and that time seems just like such a grandiose event, and you're like, well, it was only an hour and a half. Like,
yes.
How impressionable those moments are.
Yeah. No, and I also think it's to kind of try and help you remember that it's like, these kids aren't just living a traumatized life day after day after day. You know, it's like they have a hard life, but it's like, but they also have their friends and they're enjoying life. You know, like they still know how to have fun. So, I feel like they put it in there to give you a break, you know, and just kind of remind you that it's like, they're still people. Like, they're still, it's not all encompassing, you know?
Right. It's breathing time throughout, like, having to create in sequences. Each individual child has this run-in with this clown, and each individual, like trying to, like, it's well paced. Speaking of pacing, I'm about into my second third so far. Mm-hmm. Rojas Barbacoa. What are your thoughts so far?
Incredibly consistent. Okay. I feel like this thing is, I feel like I'm smoking the same at Light Up. Like, a lot less pepper on the retro, but other than that, you know, it's just been a very consistent, solid cigar.
Like, yes. And I feel like the high marks of this cigar is in the nuance of flavor. Like, it's a very easy cigar to talk, conversate. Okay, it's not pulling my attention completely here or there. Like, wow, I'm smoking a cigar. But when you focus on it, you're like, oh, there's a twinge of, like, citrus going on. And there's a bit of, like, sweetness here. And still that, like, bready component. Like, if you can pick and dissect those things apart, I feel like there's a lot going on with it for a small Robusto.
I'll take your word for it.
Ooh, there's also a little bit of black pepper in there. Interesting. Yeah, no, it's a very nuanced palate, but I really enjoy it. For that small of a cigar, it really pumps out the flavor. So what would you say is one of the highlight moments for this movie for you in terms of like going through it, what you remembered or moments that coming up and then you're like, oh yeah, this is like, I think we're one of the top notch scenes for me.
The one you just mentioned.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Beverly's encounter with it. It's just like, it's on so many levels. It's just like such horrible scene. And yeah. Then it gets worse. It's like, I obviously I'm not a girl. I mean, maybe nowadays it's not such an easy statement, but it's one of those things where I don't know what it would be like to be a teenage girl going through puberty, but I feel like that's probably not a horrible representation of how terrifying it is, you know, right. Or it could be. And then to have the only adult in your life walk in and be like, no, I don't see you and what you're going through. Mm-hmm. By the way, let me just creep on you for a couple minutes right. And turn around and walk out. It's like,
and followed up by, I worry about you, Bevy. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like,
you're not acting normal. I'm the one that's normal. You're not. Like,
yeah.
So that's one. That's another. I'm going to say if there's a disappointing factor of this movie for me is kind of the relationship between her and her father, because he's very abusive in the book, but it's only on a violent level, not on a sexual level. Now, I'm not saying only like, well, that's not an issue, but I'm saying like they definitely in the movie chose to go one way while the book was the other way, which sure. Maybe that just increases the uncomfortability for me. In those scenes, because I'm just like, ah, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's because once again, you get like a very big painter's palette of horrible things that can happen to you in childhood.
Yeah.
I feel like, what's his name? Henry covers violence. Like, that kind of abusive violence, you really get that with him and with Billy? Is it Billy? The little black kid. What's his name?
Oh, you're talking about like the main character, Mike Hansen.
Yeah, Mike. Oh my gosh, yeah. My name. Jeez. I was like, his name was Billy.
Really quick, yeah. Texas Taurus is saying, do I have time to smoke? You always have time to smoke.
Yeah, you do. You always have time to smoke. Yeah. We're on for at least another 20 minutes. We'll probably still be blathering on about this movie.
This show is going to go a bit late. I think it's going to go a bit late.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, Mike Hansen.
Sorry. Took a breath in at the wrong time. Okay, yeah, Mike Hansen. You know, and the amount of violence he's going through, you know, so it's like, I feel like the violence is very much covered mm-hmm. and it's just kind of a natural, I think, switch to kind of be like, do we really need to go with more violence or can we kind of turn in like, you know, the sexual harassment factor up, you know, to 11? And it's like, yeah, let's do that. You know, that's so I feel like that kind of, I don't know, it plays out. More,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because I don't know. In the book, was she bullied at school because everyone called her a slut?
There is like the rumor that she was going around with Bowers and such like that. But it's not so much explored on that side of things when it comes to her dad. But it also kind of plays into why she ends up with Tom. I mean, we see it in chapter 2. Another like physically abusive persons, because abuse begets abuse, and so it's followed through that, which is a cool parallel with, of course, Ben, because of like Ben's gentleness, his thoughtfulness, and kind of like how that offsets. I love the scene when they first meet and they talk about back to school. No, New Kids on the Block. Sorry, New Kids on the Block.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. They go to Ben's house and the door shuts and he's like, oh, and the big poster is there.
Yeah. No, well, and I feel like that's also the other the other thing that's like so heart-wrenching is, yeah, freaking Ben has this crush on her and he writes her these poems and is like super sweet to her. She just has eyes for the main kid. And it's just like, it's like,
exactly.
This is a better story than freaking 16 Candles or whatever. You know, it's like,
whoa.
I'm just saying, it's like, I'm more sorry for him than that movie.
Yeah, no. I see what you're saying. Okay, so going through that, we hit crisis moment where the action changes. I feel like that is after the scene they go to the house on Niebolt Street, when like that whole kerfuffle happens and then they like kind of separate. But what I do want to say, what I really enjoy about the movie in particular is that I can't remember if I read this or if I had heard it somewhere. Okay, so the scene when Eddie like falls and breaks his arm and then it comes out of the refrigerator and like stalks him and taunts him. That was one of the first scenes that any of the kids saw Bill Skarsgård in the makeup on set. Like the director was kind of keeping it like hidden from them because he's like, we don't want to like spook the kids, but at the same time, we want it to be pretty real. So they do that scene and Bill Skarsgård's doing his whole type of thing of like just in his face. And Eddie's like, like freaking out. And then apparently they were like, okay, cut. And like Eddie goes, to like, wow, that was really good, man. Like, it was good to finally meet you. Like totally like even keel.
It didn't faze him at all.
Yeah. Which I mean, it shows the kid's a pretty good actor.
Yeah, that kid is a great actor. Are you kidding me? He's like, I mean, honestly, all of them are great. Like, but I don't know, especially I'm so horrible with new actors' names. I don't know the kid's name. The one who also did Stranger Things.
Oh, Finn Wolfhard. Or sorry, Wolfhard. Yeah.
Yeah. That kid is a really good actor.
He is. It's weird, though, because the older he got, he's kind of suffering from Shirley Temple-ism, where he's a really good child actor. The older he gets, he's not that good of an actor. I don't know.
Has he done anything like else besides those two shows?
Well, I'm going off of more...
The one show in the movie.
I'm going off of more of the scales the older he gets in like Stranger Things. He did do the Ghostbusters like Redux movie. I never actually saw it.
Oh, okay.
And he's in a few others, like I think coming of age type of stuff. But no, him as Richie he did a really good job. His glasses, just down to his
hands. Yeah,
it's really good.
I was gonna say, I feel like everyone had a friend that was like that, just talked such a huge game, but like couldn't back it up for anything.
When Ben's like super serious and he's like, "Yeah, this was a beaver trapping town." Back then. Still is. Am I right, boys?
Still is. Yeah, still is.
What? Shut up. Because at the same time, you're like, what? This kid's got nothing going on. He's
just exactly. That's why it's like, shut up, kid. What are you talking about? No, I was gonna bring this up, though, because it popped out to me. I don't know. Maybe I would say that. Would you agree that maybe another moment of, like, attack? Or, yeah, probably attack is when they get in the rock fight with Henry and his goons. Because, like, I feel like that's the first time that they actually fight back in the movie, right?
Well,
because I feel like before that, they don't really fight back. They always run away. And that's, like, the first time that they, like, stand up and fight back.
I feel like while that you're right, that is the first time we see them actually fight back. I feel like it's a little, I don't know. It comes very late in the movie. So I don't know.
But that's what I mean is it was kind of an awkward time to have like that type of.
We also see scene. That's when the introduction of Mike comes to the group. But it's just, I don't know. I
guess that's true. That is where they
a little late for the attack. Texas is saying, Eric, I've been smoking through the Cigars Daily Sampler house brand. So far, I like the Dama Velada best. Oh, nice. Yeah. American Viking. Dama Velada is a very good cigar. It's So was League of Zebra and Box Press Rebellion. Good sticks. Good sticks to keep an eye out for. Yeah. That
oh, I love League of Zebra.
Yes. Classic.
Yeah.
But yeah, that rock fight is also very, I'm glad they put it in there because it's also a very pivotal scene in the book. And it's another one of those situations where like Richie, what we were talking about, when he's like, I don't know, epic prop, and then he just completely gets hit.
I'm holding the face. Yeah. Oh gosh. That I think that's the other thing about this movie that is just so like on point is they captured that very 80s kid bike gang feel. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's just there's a feeling that those types of movies generate of, oh yeah, the group of kids on bikes, you know, because it's like I remember riding around my home,
yeah,
full of kids, and you know, we'd go to the jumps, you know, whatever. And it was like, but it was just, it is such a special time, you know, right. You're kind of free to explore for the first time. Right. I don't know, it's, and this movie did a very good job of capturing that magic.
It does, yeah, through the small town feel, through their interaction, playing down by like the sewer, like the barons, as they call it. So here's a question, though. Okay, in the book, it takes the form of whatever you're most scared of. Now, what's interesting is that majority of the time, it takes on the persona of like the classic movie monsters, because that's the movies they were watching at the time. Because when they in the book, they and their kids are in the 50s, like late 50s.
Oh, okay.
So Ben sees it as the mummy. Which, like, at the end, you kind of see it's part of that. You see the Wolfman, you see Creature from the Black Lagoon, all these different things. If it were to be alive and it were to come to you, what is the monster you think that it would take on as a persona for you personally? And this question is also for people watching. Drop down in the comments. Not like your deepest fear of, like, oh, well, I don't know, your adult fears, your childhood fear that you had, like when you saw a monster movie, you're like, it's under my bed or it's in my closet or whatever.
Oh, okay. I know instantly.
Don't think of instantly, your adult I know. Brain. Think of your childhood brain. No. What would it be?
Oh, childhood brain, I know. Childhood brain, I know.
Texas saying my mother.
Nice.
All right, sorry.
Yeah, no. As a kid, I know already. It would be Chucky. From Child's Play. I was legitimately scared that my freaking Achilles tendon was going to get slashed every time I got out of my car. And I was like, I didn't have a car until I was 18. I mean, that thing freaking, like, gosh, that wrecked me. I mean, I finally, like, got over it, but it's just, I don't know. Too long. This is an example of why I'm very selective about what movies I watch.
I had a friend.
It's like, it's got to go in the right part of the brain so it can stay logical and not go to the other side where I'm afraid some freaking ghost is going to infect me.
I had a friend, no joke. Well, okay, I should rephrase this. It was a friend of my sister when she was in college, and he had a roommate. And he said for the longest time, his roommate would go to sleep and grab a glass of water and go like lay down, put it next to his nightstand. But he never took a drink ever. So then he finally asked his roommate, why do you do that? And he's like, I don't really want to tell you. He's like, why? Because he was still scared of the Wicked Witch of West. And if she came out, he would melt her by splashing water on her. So, I mean, yeah, those things carry on.
Oh, great. That's so great.
We got some comments going on here.
All right. Yeah, let's see. Joe Biden.
Joe Biden? We got Texas Torres saying childhood for me would be Poltergeist. Okay.
Oh, gosh. That's terrifying.
I tried watching that movie. It didn't hold my attention, but I'm much older.
I didn't watch it. I know of it, and that's why I'm saying it's terrifying.
Andy is saying Red Gargaton? Gargantuan?
Gargantuan,
yeah. Red Gargantuan. know.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
When I was younger, says Curtis, I was afraid of stereotypical alien archetype with the gray skin, frail bodies, and big heads.
Okay, no, but this is the question, Curtis. How tall were they? Like, did you imagine them as like little aliens, or did you like imagine them as like big aliens? Because I don't know. For me, I think aliens were never that like much of a fear factor for me, because I always just imagined them as being small. For some reason, in my head, it was like they'd always be tiny.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm curious.
You know. I think the movie Alien kind of flipped the concept of aliens for a lot of people.
Yeah.
We should have done that movie.
We can talk about it on the final week. Because that's a very iconic, you know, horror movie.
Whoa. Okay, so Andy just sent me a picture of the red gargantuan, and it looks like a boogeyman, almost. Creepy. I don't think I like that. For me, this is the dumbest childhood fear, but when I was 3 years old, I was scared out of my mind from the witch from the Snow White cartoon. Like, and it carried on to this.
Oh, really?
Like
the old hag with the apple or whatever.
Decrepit old hag was like number one. Like, ugh. And so it's funny because it's like, you're right. When you get older, you're like, ah, it's fine. But there's a hint lingering somewhere that you're like, I just don't like it. And so,
oh, I know. Just like I don't like dolls. My kids will leave a doll out on the couch, and I'm always like,
Yeah,
I'm an adult now. I can't be afraid of the doll.
That's what would happen. It'd be like, you know, you're reading in the library and then you see the balloon, and then this old hag would start like probably crawling across the room, kind of like in chapter two. And I was like, no, come on. Yeah. Not this.
See, I think that's the only part of this movie that, like, I know why he did it this way, but it's also the part that I'm most iffy about, is all the kids like stopped being afraid of him. It was like, once they stopped being afraid of him, it was like beat him and kill him, you know? And it was like, we go straight from not being afraid to violence. Like, I don't, what are we saying here? You know? And I get it. It's a monster movie. It's a horror movie, whatever. It's like, you got to kill the thing somehow. You can't, you know, Care Bear stare it to death or whatever.
Right,
but it's one of those things where I'm just like, I don't know. Like, because as we joke about our childhood fears, most of us hit that point where we kind of go, let's think about this with just the slightest bit of logic. And you're able to kind of, you know, move to the point where you're not afraid. Like, there's the conversation I had with my son, I don't know, a month or two ago, where he was like, it's like, no, I don't want to go over, you know, to that room or whatever to get the, I asked him to go get a phone charger. And he was like, I don't want to go in that room. It's dark or whatever. I'm like, what's over there? There's nothing over there. The only way to get in the house is through that door. And we've been sitting here the whole time. There's nothing over there. He's like, yeah, but it's dark. I don't want to go over there, you know? And then he ended up asking, because I walked with him, and he's like, how'd you stop being afraid of the dark? And I was like, I didn't. You just realize that like the odds are in your favor.
That's not when you're
there's
like,
nothing over there. I'm gonna go over there. You know, like, I'm a grown man. I can go down swinging. Like, I don't know. You just like, kind of hit a point where you get over it.
You didn't pull up your like belt buckle and be like, "Well, you gotta be a man."
I wish it was that easy. Be like, "Yep, no." One day you just stopped. Like, no, you just kind of moved on. You know,
right? Okay, so we got a few comments. I'm going to try to catch up here. One.
Yeah. I wanted to hear what people had to say.
We got Manuel back in, so good, glad to have you with us. Andy is saying it's from the movie called War of the Gargantuans. So
there you go.
I haven't actually watched it.
Okay.
We're just saying, I think human size made them scarier because that made them super similar to us.
Yeah.
Just different enough to be upsetting.
Yeah, see? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that kind of. But isn't I sorry, this is a total tangent, but I feel like I saw something popped up on my feed the other day about that, where it's like, it's, I forget what it's called, but it's like it's the something something effect, or the something something like uncomfortable or something. But basically it's like, it is a like a universal human trait to be like extremely, like very wary or like not afraid, but like there's a big rejection sensor to something that is human-like but not human.
Yeah,
and it's like and you know the whole meme of it or joke of it is it like at some point that was an evolutionary trait that survived through us as like a universe. So it's like what humanoid thing that wasn't human was in our past, you know, that we really didn't want to like. And it's like, you know, it's the whole thing to freak you out about aliens or whatever, but it's just like, it is a weird thing that, yeah, if it's human sized, see, that's why I don't think they ever scared me. Cause I don't know, for some reason in my mind, they were always small, but yeah, if you imagine human size, it's always like,
No, it's feels true. Weird. There's something the offsetting about it for sure.
Yeah, offsetting. There you go. That's great. Sorry, that was a random tangent.
Andy is saying about the fear of the dark. My dad's there's nothing that is in there in the light. Bull crap. There are great gargantuans. Curtis is saying it's called the Uncanny Valley.
Oh, okay. Uncanny Valley. Yeah, that's it.
Uncanny Valley. Yeah, no, back in the day, like, you know, back in the day when we worked together on that farm where, I used to write plays.
Galaxy, a long time ago, far, far away.
Right. And I used to write plays for a living. Like, that's how we made money. I used to, like, have, like, part dreams and the wake up be like, oh, here we go. Here's a premise for an idea. I had one of those out of the blue that's kind of in that realm. I was telling Maui about it. I was like, if you had the, you know, like, the age old, it's raining, your car breaks down, knock on a door, people take you in, and you're just like, there's something weird about it. Have kind of like the picture, like kind of play on the concept of family dynamics and how toxic they can be, but let's make it extreme. Make the most extreme moments where there's like, I don't know, one of them's like a serial killer, I don't know. But they're just enough normal to, there's something off. Their vocabulary is off. The way they talk, their speech is off. I was like, we could call it off kilter, but if you like split it up, like off kilt, like killed her, and it's about like finding out what happened to this woman, blah blah. Like some, I was like, but there is that element you can draw on. Like they're speaking normal words, they're being nice, they're being proper, but it's not right. There's something that's not working.
Right,
that kind of thing.
Well, and that's, and I feel I not to completely change the subject, but I feel like that's kind of one of the things with AI generated things is people always say like there's 100%. Something that you can tell is not right, you know, like it's not normal, and it's because all it is it's just, you know, it can only intake information, process through it, and then make, you know, guesses, you know, based on probability, you know. That's not what we do. We generate new things, you know, like it's very weird. So
I remember I had a conversation with Curtis about that, like when they first did Toy Story and such, and like trying to assimilate the micro fractions of expressions that every human being has to where it's like the broad picture is, yes, Buzz Lightyear is raising an eyebrow like, but it's not completely there. And it works on toys, but in the humans, you're just like, what? It's weird.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why, I don't know, when was the last time you went back and watched Beast Wars? That, like, old, like, 2000 or late 90s CG or CGI, it's, like, super clunky, and I don't know, it looks so bad. It's like, I don't even want to watch this. It's so, like, it feels gross.
So, we're kind of running out of time here, but what I want to touch on...
Let's get back to the movies.
Well, no.
Put some tangents there.
I think, like, we can kind of follow the track. It's pretty straightforward in terms of, like, a climax when they actually find Beverly and they confront it and defeat it.
Yeah.
Resolution, they make the vow. But what I want to touch on is the difference between that climax and the climax in the book. And it's very much what you were saying that you wanted. It's less physical, and it's more... like mental. So I'm going to try to do this in like a very quick snapshot because the it's very confusing and weird. They kind of touch on it. You know how in chapter 2 they talk about the ritual of Chud?
Yeah.
So in the book, the concept is they find this basically old ancient like book that you basically meet on another plane with this entity. This is how like some of the Indians and such like ridded themselves from this alien clown thing, is that you're on this another plane, you're supposed to lock tongues together, and the kids are like, well, what do you do after this? And you basically tell them like riddles, basically. And they're like, what are you talking about? And the ritual is, if you can tell them like a riddle to outsmart them, then it like rids of like that entity. And so Bill goes in to lock eyes. And so he becomes like the Eddie, like stare, like completely just blank. The kids are watching him do this, and he locks tongues in the ritual chud. And what he starts screaming is, he thrusts his fists against the post, still insists he sees the ghosts. Because what it is, it's a tongue twister to help a speech impediment. But when he's a kid, and this is so heart-wrenching, he loses his brother, and they explain Bill experiencing this distance between him and his parents, this tangible coldness that he can feel inside the room, like a wall. Like, he's like, it's there when he sits on the couch to try to watch a movie, and the parents are just checked out. Like, he lost the love of his parents, and he's got to earn it back. So almost, if he can beat this speech impediment, if he can say this certain amount of times and fast, he will find the love of his parents again. And so, yeah, it's brilliance of Stephen King. But what it is, it's fighting this entity that is using your childhood fears and fighting it using childhood belief. And so then using that, they're able to defeat it. So like Eddie takes his inhaler because it's like, to a child, this is your lifeline, and he learns it's a placebo, whatever. So when he's like they get more close quarters, he throws it into its mouth and believes it's battery acid and like squirts it. And the battery acid like eats up part of it because he's like, it's battery acid. I believe it is. As a kid, I believed it was this. I believe it. And so they go through that theme, which I feel like is really well handled.
Okay.
So how do you accomplish that in a movie?
A bit more depth. I don't know if you can. Like, and I think that's why I'm going to collect my words here so I don't just fill the space with the same three words. When you take a book and you move it to the film category, it is one of those things where I feel like you have a better chance of saying, we are going to take the elements out of this book that are key and make it like why people love it, but then put it into a movie format, because it's like a book is different than a movie. Like, a movie needs to be one digestible session versus a book is, you read it over the course of days, weeks, you know, like it's over time. And so you get to experience the book, I feel like, more passionately, because you can come back to it refreshed, versus with the movie doesn't care how tired you are at hour 45, you know, you still got 15 more minutes and you got to muscle through it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I feel like on those things where so much of that is happening internal, it just doesn't translate to the screen well. So you have to shift it to be something that you can show.
I agree.
Because you don't get to have that internal dialogue. And you know the movies where they try and do that, where you know, reading the book and the characters like this.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is them trying to do the internal thoughts through facial expressions? Like, don't. Like, just move on from it. Leave it out. Like, it doesn't need to be there. You know, because it's like, unless you've read the book, you don't care. Or you're like... So wait, why was he mad, or why was he confused? You know, it's like, I don't get it. And it's just one of those things. Well, 12,000 years ago, you know, this, and that's why he's thinking, you know, it's like, what? Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. And when you're running that delicate balance, I feel like that's why this movie works for me, is because it chose to pay homage to the moments that are so impactful and balance it as best it can in a digestible 2-hour segment. And so, yeah, there's definitely weak spots, but it's, in terms of as a grand scope of like Stephen King narratives to screen, it's definitely one of the best, I feel like, that has happened. And Andy is saying movies can't transfer a character's thoughts like a book. I mean, you can do like narration, you can do some of those things. I feel like if you're going to try to do that, it has to be handled very delicately. And I know there are some movies I'm not thinking of that accomplished it, but there are so few and far between. very few and far
between. They are. Yeah. It's, I feel like you kind of get, you can get the two types of movie, the two types of bad book to movie, you know, transitions. You get the, either the one that was done by someone who read the book and loved the book and wanted to like literally translate the book to the movie. And you're just like, this is so boring. Or this is like, why are you doing this? Like, it's not engaging. Because they just wanted to pay homage to the book. And it's like, okay, well, you kind of missed the point, but okay. Like, I get it. At least you're trying to be, you know, to the source material. And then you get the other one where someone, you know, reads the book and goes, oh my gosh, I love this book. And then they make the movie and they totally miss the point of the book. And so the movie, you're like, what movie am I watching? Like, this isn't the book at all. Like, this isn't even hitting the point that the book was trying to make, you know? And so you get like those two versions of like the bad movies. And then I feel like it does that thing where it's like, we're going to pull the thing that makes this book great. We're going to put it in a movie format and we're going to trim, you know, we got to trim the fat because it's got to be a movie, but it's like, we're going to make sure we, you know, hit points that matter.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, and I think we're still talking. No, but we're still talking in the realm of Stephen King movies. That's why I didn't watch Dark Tower. Like, I absolutely love Dark Tower, but from the trailers, I'm like, that's nothing to do with the book. You chose the characters and you said this is what we're gonna do, and it has nothing to do with the original. So, yeah,
right.
But we are into our final third of Barbacoa. I'm actually down to like an inch. I'm almost nubbing this thing.
I was gonna say, yeah.
I don't know
that's
about
good.
You. Yeah, I feel like the spice is kind of ramped up a little bit. There's a bit more pepper going on.
I also feel like once you always get in the final third, I feel like pepper just kicks back up. I almost feel like that's more of a heat thing, you know?
True.
But yes, there is definitely a little bit more pepper. But honestly, the thing that I'll give high marks to this is normally when I get to this, I start getting tongue bite or, you know, like just where my tongue is starting to feel it just because it's getting hotter.
Right.
This isn't doing that. Like, I don't know what's different, but
no.
What?
Chris is trying to bait me.
Oh no. Oh no.
Here missing we go. The point of the source material is every Zack Snyder movie. Curtis, we're at the end of our show, so I don't have time.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need that at the start of an episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. He threw out the lure. I don't want to bite for it.
we'll bookmark it.
I sense a future show built on that one statement might have to happen.
Yeah. We'll do a Zack Snyder episode.
Yeah. But I agree. It stays cool. It stays pretty even, pretty consistent. You get those notes that are like more prominent in other areas, but it's overall the profile seems to be pretty like contained. For me, in terms of rating this cigar, I'm going to say it's a solid 7.2 out of 10.
Yeah, I was going to say solid 7.5 for me. Like it is a very strong staple. It's strong as in like a strong choice. Like it's not like, oh, I guess I could smoke that. It's like, oh no, I'll take one of those. You know, it's one of those.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm trying to think. I feel like this is almost a Batman Begins type of cigar. It's a, you want to watch a superhero movie? Sure. It's not that involved. It's not bad. It's actually very interesting. I could watch it. Like, you could throw it on and be like, sure, I'll watch it. I'm in the mood for a superhero movie. I feel like it's in that realm for me.
Okay. Yeah. I could go with that. Because, yeah, I don't know. I'm not getting a comedy vibe from this. A lot of the times, that's like, those are comedies for me. I'll throw on a comedy that I've seen a million times. But this doesn't have a comedy vibe. I like the Batman Begins vibe. Yeah.
Nice. Curtis is saying we just need to do Man of Steel next time I'm on. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We will talk about it. Texas Taurus, Evil Bong, next movie review. Okay, I'm going to look up this movie, and I will dip my toes in the water to see what Evil Bong is about, but I think I know what it's about. But yeah, we'll take a look.
We could venture a guess.
I think it's about like symbols.
An
like
Evil Bong.
Yeah. Okay, in terms of the movie, what would you rate this movie?
This movie is definitely like, just as a movie as a whole, I would give it like a 7, you know. Okay. As a horror movie or a thriller suspense, you know, I wouldn't call it thriller suspense. I'd call it a horror movie, but yeah. I would definitely put it more like in the 8, 5, 9s. Like it's a really solid movie. The acting's great. Pacing feels great. Like, I don't know. It's a really well done movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would definitely say for me, it's an 8.5 out of 10 on both scales. As a movie in total, I mean, I watch it almost every year. I never get tired of it. And as a horror film, yeah, it's definitely up there. So it's definitely in the favorites. But I think I'm a little biased because it's Stephen King. So that's the way it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all have our soft spots.
Yeah. So in terms of what we are going to be exploring, I wanted to kind of announce this at the end of the show so everyone has a chance to potentially watch these movies, also pick up the cigars while they're available. Next week, by the suggestion written in by Curtis Bailey, we're going to be watching Tucker and Dale versus Evil. If you guys have not seen this movie, it is great. Coleman, you said you haven't seen it yet?
I have not. This will be my first time watching it.
You're in for a treat.
I've heard about this movie, so I kind of know what I'm getting into. But
it's definitely fun.
We'll see.
So we're going to be exploring that. And then after that week, Curtis is saying, to be honest, I barely remember the movie, didn't love it, didn't hate it. So I guess that means it's 7. Oh, for it. Yeah. Okay. And then by Curtis's recommendation, by Coleman's recommendation, we're going to do Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. Following week, we're going to do A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
The Krasinski film. And then at the end of that, on the third week, we're going to be talking about horror films as a genre. Kind of the evolution of where they started, where they've gone, that sort of thing. And then we're going to be taking the next week off. That actually lands on Halloween. So we will not be on for Halloween.
Kids will revolt.
That's right. Or they'll just be like background noise of like kids.
I was going to say they're going to be like, Dad, all you're going to see is little, you know, trick-or-treat pumpkins come into the frame.
Right.
Have a go.
But yeah, so that is it, 2017. Chris is saying Tombstone soon. Yes, we're going to have the epic Tombstones Smackdown, because I will leave everyone with this. Tombstone's not a good movie. But with that said, we will see you guys next week. Coleman, thanks for jumping on. It was a great review.
Yep, it was. It was a good time, guys. We'll see you next week.
See you guys.